Like Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. From exits on the highway to streets and neighborhoods, the name Layton is a common one around Milwaukee. But many people today really have no idea of Frederick Layton's importance to the cultural landscape of the city. That will change if Eric Vogel and John Eastberg have anything to say about it. They are the authors of a new book, Layton's Legacy, a historic American art collection, 1888 to 2013. The book makes the point that Layton, who was a butcher and English immigrant, was one of the city's most important early patrons of the arts, and in his day was considered a cultural ambassador to Milwaukee. Vogel tells Lake Effect's Bonnie North more about the man.
Frederick Layton founded the Layton Art Gallery in 1888, 125 years ago, and the Layton Art Collection, even though we lost the original gallery in the 1950s, the Layton Art Collection is still the founding core collection of early European and American art at the Milwaukee Art Museum. So it's very much alive and present in our community. But somehow Frederick Layton's name, we only identify with the avenue, with the
Layton Boulevard.
Yes, exactly,
yeah.
With the highway sign. Somehow, I think because the original gallery was demolished in the 50s, and then unfortunately the Layton School of Art was also demolished somewhat in the 60s, that Frederick Layton's true legacy has been forgotten. And what we hope to do with the book was really tell the story, the comprehensive history of 125 years, but to do it as much through pictures as through words. So we have over 700 historic photographs and illustrations, most of which people have never seen before. We're culled from archives that are at the Wisconsin Historical Society, local archives, as well as a very important cache of personal papers that we found at a relative's in the basement of a home in Fox Point.
Well, tell me about that, because that's really a fascinating thing, because my understanding was he really didn't leave much or that we knew about.
Well, the Laytons didn't have children, and so they had a favorite niece. And so it was the niece that inherited the private papers and photographs of Frederick Layton and his wife, Elizabeth. And so it traveled down in this gentleman's family, and there it all was. We have photographs of Frederick Layton from the 1850s during his first trips abroad post-emigration, all the way up until 1919 when he died. So I think one of my favorite moments is when we found this very specific photograph of Frederick Layton on board ship going to England. And I said, well, that was taken with a very specific Kodak camera from the early 1890s. And he said, I'll be right back. The gentleman went downstairs, came back with the camera. And so it was just one of these total experiences that all of this material had been preserved in the family, and then that they were so generous to share it with Eric and myself as we went through with this project.
How did you track it down? How did you know it was even there to go find?
It was an amazing story. We were doing research in the Milwaukee Art Museum archive in the library, and I happened to notice there were photocopies of what looked to be a travel diary, but there was no diary in the collection. And in the margin on one of the Xerox copies was the name Bem underlined. So I asked the librarian, I said, do you know what this reference is? She said, no. So no one seemed to know who it was or where it came from. So we literally just cold called all the Bems that were in the directory in southeastern Wisconsin. And Robert Bem, who lives in Fox Point, answered the call and invited us to his home. And literally in a series of conversations, he brought up information, photographs from every decade of Frederick Layton's life. So what we thought about Frederick Layton originally, the Wisconsin Historical Society has four boxes of papers on Frederick Layton. They have over 40 on Captain Pabst. So they were very surprised at how little information we had on Frederick Layton. All of a sudden, that completely changed. We had information, photographs from every decade of his life. And that allowed us to describe a different picture about who Frederick Layton was. The original biography, the short biographies that we had, portrayed him as a bit of a provincial meatpacker and not really understanding how he could launch this collection and where he might have been taught about art. In point of fact, he was an international businessman, and he did most of his meatpacking trade with Great Britain. He made 99 trips across the Atlantic in his lifetime. He literally spent every summer for almost 15 years in England.
Roughly. And now he was originally from England, right?
So he's originally from England.
So he already had those contacts.
But that international quality, the fact that he traveled by rail to New York every year, then to Liverpool and to London, that he was buying from Arthur Tooth and Sons and the French Gallery in London. it gives a kind of panache to his collecting. And it helped us to also reevaluate the importance of the paintings that he bought there. So it helped us to revise what our understanding of Frederick Leighton was, as well as the pictures that are today in the Leighton Art Collection. And part of what we tried to do with the book was invite scholars from all over the country who had an expertise in a specific subject matter, for instance, maritime painting, to come and write and research the Leighton Art Collection paintings. And so their scholarship is in this book, 40 masterpieces from the collection.
So what did we think of the collection before, where you were allowed to change this by this research and by what you discovered?
Talk, I mean, about the 1960s.
Yeah, what were we trying to adjust?
I think for many people, the Leighton collection became kind of outdated shortly after his death in 1919. There were over 500 works in the collection of Victorian 19th century paintings. And so Charlotte Partridge, who became curator shortly following Frederick Leighton's death, really came in and reformed the entire gallery, took down all the Victorian paintings, and just kind of brought out the best work and then introduced changing exhibitions and that sort of thing. So the Victorian memory continued to dim throughout the course of the 20th century. And that really reflected what was going on in the art world in general. There just wasn't a great appreciation for Victorian art.
Did people think it was just too sentimental?
It was. I mean, that's really exactly what people thought. And, you know, by the mid-20th century, the varnish had yellowed. The very nature of the artwork just did not look at its prime as it had in London in the 1880s, 1890s. And so one half of the Leighton collection as it stood at that point was deaccessioned and sold in New York City, saving the choicest paintings. And while myself, I love Victorian art, I have to admit that some of them were pretty overly sentimental, and I could completely understand why they were sold. So at that point, Leighton moved into a very dynamic period in the late 60s, moving forward into the 70s, embracing modern art briefly in 1970 with four choice paintings and sculpture. And then in the early 1970s, moving into American decorative arts, which has been extremely successful. And that really led to a whole new life, a whole new era for Leighton.
And most recently, there's been a reevaluation of the very Victorian paintings that in the 1960s had been denigrated to the attic. And the masterpieces today are on display in a salon-style hang at the Milwaukee Art Museum. The Leighton Art Collection trustees have really tried to conserve and replace any frames. For instance, Charlotte Partridge had removed – the 1950s was a time of very sleek the gilded frame was very out of date and were removed, if you can imagine. Sometimes they were lost. So the Leighton Collection today has replaced as many of the frames as it can. And so you see these grand paintings in their original gilt frames, and they can be 8 feet by 8 feet. They're a monumental presence. And then when you see them in a group on the wall, it even carries greater stature. The art world, I think, has recognized, again, the quality of some of these great masterpieces, and the values are skyrocketing.
Well, and the other thing, too, and you make a point, I think it was in your preface, that Frederick Leighton actually was the person who really started this kind of museum, this kind of gallery. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people forget that, too.
Oh, people take for granted that, you know, every community has an art museum of some sort in it. But at that point in the 19th century, there really was only the Corcoran Museum of Art in Washington, D.C. that would have been a comparable single patron art gallery. And so Frederick Leighton to go off and do this between 1883 and start the project, completed in 1888. This was noted throughout the United States and in Europe that Frederick Leighton had done this for Milwaukee because
– the curator from the Corcoran Gallery came to Milwaukee to measure and inspect the new gallery because really Leighton had established a new precedent for the art museum. At the time, you have to remember that St. Louis and Cincinnati and Detroit and Chicago, they had just built new buildings, but they weren't the buildings that we see today. Those were all from the early 20th century or after the World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago. So the marble palace that we understand, like the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, that didn't exist at Frederick Leighton's time. What existed were these almost castle structures with large turrets, heavily rusticated. Oftentimes, it would take several days to tour the collections. And Leighton really had a different model in mind. He was influenced by the Dulwich Picture Gallery outside of London, the smaller scale urban gallery that someone could stop into and take a spin for 45 minutes or an hour. It was the kind of thing that you would do almost like shopping. You would stop in, you would look around, you might be inspired. It was a place of reflection. It wasn't in a park. It wasn't a grandiose structure. It was integrated into the urban fabric directly across the street from Watts on the corner of Jefferson and Mason Streets. It was the kind of thing that I think Frederick Leighton really saw and wanted people to do as a daily routine in their lives.
So go have some tea. Go see some pictures.
Exactly. Right. And it was bold. I mean, you have to remember, he was chided by the press and by his German friends, Mr. Pfister and Mr. Mm-hmm. Pabst. They said, why isn't there more German art? And I think there was a sense that Leighton really wanted to reflect in the gallery the diversity of the ethnic groups that were living at that time in Milwaukee. So by the early 20th century, there are over 18 nations represented on the gallery walls. Most from Europe, but there is an understanding that there was a kind of Congress of Nations that was represented, and diversity, and we call it sentimentality, but I would also say that the people that Leighton wanted to come to the gallery were not already schooled in art. So this was an introduction to them. So he wanted it to be accessible. He didn't want something to intimidate them. It was very important that they could empathize with the things that they saw on the wall. One of the things that John and I tried to convey in the book was that people were trying to make new lives for themselves. These were immigrants. And so I think Leighton provided them in the themes of the paintings on the wall with different sort of visual clues to what they might become. I mean, there was everything from butchers to blacksmiths and farmers and factory workers, so that the idea of seeing something that they could become would be an inspiration to them in their lives.
And also put together by somebody who did exactly that, had reinvented himself in a new country.
I mean, it really was a self-made man from coming to America with a trade in the processing of meat and turned it into just one of Milwaukee's premier industries and really put Milwaukee on the map for meatpacking.
Was a partner with Armour, who eventually moved to Chicago. So it was one of the largest meatpacking factories in the Menominee Valley. We know that the slaughterhouse tradition business was harsh. The environments were difficult for the workers. And I really do think that Frederick Leighton really cared about his workers in a way that was more supportive than a typical employer, a typical owner. And so he was designing this for the workers in his factories and other factories. It was open on Sunday so that those workers could come to the gallery without charge.
And was one of the very first to do that.
He's not a robber baron. And maybe this is why his biography hasn't been better known, because he was so humble he didn't want it to be about himself. He wanted it to be about the artworks. He wanted it to be about his employees and the citizens of Milwaukee and what they could take away from the gallery and the experience of seeing this art. He actually didn't want it to be called the Leighton Art Gallery. His friends really wanted to do that in tribute to him.
Do you know what he wanted to call it?
No. We just know that in documents at the opening of the gallery, the original statements, that one of his very close friends, the Reverend David Keene, had encouraged him to establish a gallery, really acted as Leighton's mentor. We think that David Keene was the person who taught Leighton much about art history and painting in particular, that he would have encouraged Leighton to put his name on the gallery. That what made Leighton's gift so unusual is that he participated in the acquisition of the objects, but he didn't do it alone. He had a board of trustees even then and created a public institution which was by its nature collaborative. So he had a board of trustees that was also bringing works. Many of those trustees were collectors, Mr. Metcalf, Mitchell, Pabst, Pfister, as we can go to the Pfister today and see the collection. So it was really about inspiring other people to participate in the process of collecting and enjoying art.
I think that was a remarkable gift and is even referenced up to today as being one of the largest civic gifts to our community. And I think one of the important things is to keep the perspective of when Frederick Leighton arrived in Milwaukee in May of 1943, there were a couple thousand people here. And so he, as a teenager and as his life developed, so did the community. I mean, this is something that I'm constantly reminding people, is that we don't see communities grow like that anymore. And where in my youth, I would have seen a small village of 2,000 people. And then by the end of his life in 1919, there were close to 400,000 people here. And I think by the 1880s, he saw that Milwaukee needed an art gallery as a symbol of giving polish to kind of this frontier
town. Well, and that growth and kind of recognizing the fact that it had become something other than a small backwater.
Right. I think those trips to New York, to London, to Europe on an annual basis, which was not unheard of but was uncommon, that gave him a perspective much more worldly than most people living in America at that point, to have that ability to go to Europe, to go to art galleries, and eventually to buy artwork and bring it back to the community.
And the Leighton Collection is so thrilled to still have its place on the lakefront. I would encourage everyone to go and see the Salon Style Hang, the anniversary exhibition that is still up at the Milwaukee Art Museum, because the curators at the Art Museum have done a fantastic job at evoking the style and presence and grandeur of the original Leighton Gallery and its paintings.
Well, I want to thank both of you so much for the labor of love, Leighton's Legacy, a historic American art collection, 1888 to 2013. And it's been great talking with you today.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Thank you.
John Eastberg is a Milwaukee historian, and Eric Vogel is an architectural historian. They're the authors of the book Leighton's Legacy, a historic American art collection, 1888 to 2013. They'll talk about Frederick Leighton this Sunday at Boswell Book Company. There is a link to more information from wuwm.com/lake effect. Vogel and Eastberg spoke with Bonnie North. ¶¶